What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Dr. Sheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show specializing in holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters, but I always want to remind you that men are absolutely welcome to stay tuned in. And I also want to remind you that this program is dedicated to providing women with greater knowledge to help them regain and maintain optimal health at all stages of their lives. And it is also an opportunity to have in-depth conversations about the many issues that are of particular concern to women. And as I always like to say, it's so important to be empowered with truthful information so we can make the wisest choices possible for our own health and well-being. I want to remind everyone, if you have not yet had the chance to visit my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, I certainly invite you to do so, because once you opt in, there are many free reports, special reports that I've written on many of the key issues that women are facing and needing some help with to discern what really is truth from fact. And also there are many articles that you can read on my articles page, teleseminars, and of course from my website you can get to all the archived shows on this radio show and also the other show I do on the same network every Sunday called the Women's Healing Circle. So I certainly invite you to take the opportunity to get empowered with truthful information. Several months ago, I was very fortunate to attend a wonderful conference in Jackson Hole. It was the Teton Wellness Festival. It was an amazing experience, and of course it's in a beautiful place, and a wonderful group of people attended, and some very inspiring lectures as well. And when I was there, I was very, very fortunate to get to hear and to meet my guest today. And my guest today is Dr. Joan Boroshenko, who is, I have to say, in my experience when I met her personally and listened to her three-hour presentation, I was just so taken not only by her words of wisdom, but by the authenticity of her beingness. So it's a great pleasure to have Dr. Joan Boroshenko with us. She has a new book out called Fried, Why You Burn Out and How to Revive. And we're going to be talking about the big burnout and how to revive. But before we do that, I just want to introduce everyone to Dr. Joan Boroshenko. If you have not already encountered her, she is the author of 15 books and numerous video programs and CD programs and guided meditations. She's quite a leader in the field of, I would say, personal development, of consciousness, of health. She is an internationally known speaker in spirituality, integrative medicine, and the mind-body connection, and has a doctorate in medical sciences from Harvard Medical School. She is a licensed clinical psychologist, the best-selling author of numerous books, and I do believe this is the 15th one, she'll tell me in a minute, and a journalist and radio presenter. So, welcome, Dr. Boroshenko.
Hi there, Sheryl, and please call me Joan. And also, the name is pronounced Boroshenko, and I used to pronounce it Boroshenko before my husband of that name told me there's no sh, it's just an S.
I didn't know if it was a Russian thing or what, you know.
It's common. It happens to be a Ukrainian name. All the E-N-K-O names are.
You know, so. I was sitting here, and I had that very question, is it Boroshenko or Boroshenko? So thank you for letting me know, and thank you for give me permission to call you Joan, which happens to be
You're welcome.
A great name.
Hold it.
Well, it is a great pleasure to have you here, Joan. And You know, I was so impressed by the presentation. I felt it was very heartwarming and so sincere. And I'm thrilled that your new book, Fried, is out. And I'm particularly excited about this conversation we're having because this issue of burnout, which as a naturopathic doctor who has personally gone through, as you say, Dante's hell and gone through and out the other side, I know this only too well, and I see this being the experience of so many people from my practice and from getting out there in the world that I explore and you know, where I lecture to. So this is critical, and what we're going to be talking about are the many facets that contribute to this condition which you're referring to in Fried, or the burnout. So we have lots to talk about.
We do, and I'd love to get your perspective too, Cheryl, as a naturopathic physician. So we're going to have a great conversation.
We are, and I do see this as a critical issue occurring right now. At least I'm really aware of it, and I think it is not understood, certainly the physiological part of it, and there are many components to it, but certainly the physiological part is little understood by traditional medical model who you know, prefer to just, as you say in your book, you know, prescribe an antidepressant. But it isn't about that. That's not the issue. Depression is a symptom of a deeper issue. So why don't we start at the beginning, Joan? What made you look at this topic?
Well, I'm fascinated by it personally as well as professionally because I have been burned out on two occasions. And on many occasions, I found myself starting down the path to burnout because while it ends in a state that looks a lot like depression, there are a lot of intermediate stages along the way. And I thought to myself, if people only knew what burnout was, and could catch it in its early stages, then it wouldn't proceed to a physical and emotional collapse. And I see that a lot as, you know, as a healthcare provider. I used to run a clinic at one of the Harvard Medical School teaching hospitals. I ran it for 10 years, a program for people with stress-related disorders, and then separate programs for people with cancer and AIDS. But what I saw was a lot of people who were more than stressed out. And this is an important point because I think when people are, they're feeling overwhelmed, they're feeling busy, they're feeling like, oh, I'm stretched between home and family or sandwiched between young kids and elderly parents. There are so many ways to burn out. Or I'm in a job where I just don't feel like I have any control and there have been so many layoffs and how can they expect us to do what's left? All of those create burnout opportunities. But what I found was that burnout and stress really are very, very opposite conditions. That when you're stressed, you really still try hard to meet all of your obligations and to do what's necessary. But there comes a point, and you know, when your adrenals are really fatigued, and when you begin that slide into it's helpless, you know, it's hopeless, I don't see any possibilities for this situation changing. At that point, you're no longer in the physiology of stress. You move into the physiology of helplessness, hopelessness, and depression. And I thought, there has to be a better way. If people understand what it is and understand how to intervene early, then they won't get to that point. So that's why I wrote the book.
And, you know, it's an interesting book because you say it's, you know, partially written with your Facebook friends. So, it's an interesting concept, you know, incorporating your dialogue through your Facebook friends into the context of the book and getting that feedback from people and their input and their own experience and wisdom as well.
You know, it was a fascinating process because, you know, I have a doctorate in cell biology. I'm a cancer cell biologist and researcher as well as a licensed psychologist. So, you know, I had lots of things that were important to put in the book. But one of the things I look for in a book is a wide range of experience. I want to know how people cope with burnout, why they burn out, and how they cope with burnout, no matter what their history and background. And I thought, my Facebook community is a great place to start. And I just, you know, posted a question, who's burned out? And it gave rise to an entire year of conversation on every aspect of what burnout is, how it progresses, and most importantly, how you revive from it, how you find your passion when it may seem to you like it's flown out the window and your motivation is low. It was just inspiring to hear people's stories and to be able to interact in real time. Because here's one of the things, Cheryl, about reviving from burnout. You have to really see what gives you life, because we're like batteries. We need to recharge, and, you know, if we don't, then we run out of juice. So the question is, what gives you juice? And for me, I'm a classic extrovert, you know, Myers-Briggs Jungian extrovert. And I actually get energy from interacting with people. And it was a very exciting process for a year from which I got a lot of energy. And it's been fun, you know, including just little snippets from the people on Facebook and including some of their stories with their kind permission.
Well, that's certainly a creative way of putting this information together and getting that kind of support. And I'm sure an inspiration is, you know, you kind of interact with one another. It's inspiring. You know, burnout, there are many levels to talk about it. Are you comfortable talking about it from, if we can address the physical, emotional, mental, spiritual maybe aspects of it? Because I know they all are interwoven into this experience, which we call burnout, and I kind of give like the full faceted approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the, you know, here was one of the joys of Facebook. Early on, a woman who I'd never met before, a psychologist by the name of Beverly Potter, who really wrote the a couple of the original books on burnout all the way back in the 1970s when it was first being researched. She suddenly appeared on Facebook and she said, Joan, I know your work and I know burnout, and the place where you could really be helpful is giving us a spiritual perspective on it. And so I did. We cover all of the bases, the physical and, as you said, certainly the emotional, because burnout is such a case of loss of your positive emotions and almost an overwhelm of negativity and helplessness. And then, of course, the spiritual.
Okay, well, good. Well, then let's start with the physical and kind of describe what's happening. How does our body deal with this overwhelm, and why are the symptoms that, you know, the exhaustion, the inability to get up with any energy and really not even be able to generate much energy during the day, and this whole adrenal connection?
I want you to talk more about that, because you're the naturopath. That's one of the things that completely excites me about having this conversation with you.
Well,
but I would say that, you know, the early stages of burnout definitely mimic the stress response. And what we've got is a lot of adrenaline and a lot of cortisol being secreted. And what we know, of course, about cortisol is that it inhibits the activity of the immune system. And the main thing that happens, both in stress and in burnout, one of the main things is that we put out a lot of molecules that create inflammation, a lot of cytokines, which are products of lymphocytes, products of the immune system. And right now, medical science is really beginning to understand inflammation as a common factor in everything from osteoporosis and the frailty of aging to many cancers. And so what happens is that you start to run a generalized state of inflammation and of immune suppression. And then we get into the topic of adrenal fatigue. And here's where naturopathy and integrative medicine has a much broader perspective than general medicine on what happens when your adrenal glands, which have two functions, get overstimulated. Because, you know, the inner core, if you think about an orange, the meat of the orange, the inner core of the adrenal makes epinephrine, adrenaline, and noradrenaline. And the outer core, like the rind of the orange, is making cortisol. And one very interesting thing to notice is that when you're depressed, your cortisol balance goes off kilter. But as far as medical science goes, you know, there are just limits. Okay, are you making this much cortisol? And if so, you're fine. But certainly, as a naturopath, you understand what adrenal fatigue is. And I'd like to call on your expertise to explain that to the audience.
Well, it's such an interesting topic, which happens to be a favorite issue that I address a lot and talk about it on the show and talk about it to patients, because I was a classic case, and that's how I got to learn about it. And I think the couple of comments I want to make are, first of all, there are different stages of the adrenal's ability to deal with stress. And initially, as you were saying, when you're having huge demands and cortisol is your long-term stress hormone, the body can kind of come to the needs of the moment, and it produces high amounts of cortisol to deal with maybe the chronic inflammation that's occurring, something that's stimulating the need to have more of this hormone. But after a while, like any of us, we just get tired, and the stages progress of the inability of the adrenals, which are really providing us with this life force and this energy and dynamism in life and in the cells, begins to wane, and we get into the second stage, which is the faltering stage, and then we get into the third stage, which is, it's like flogging a dead horse. The adrenals just go, I am so tired, I can't do this. And the other model I'd like to bring in, Joan, because it's been really profound to me, is the Chinese medicine model of the adrenals. If you can translate them, kind of, it's the kidney energy is this energetic system that is contains, from a Chinese perspective, our inherited energy. So we all come in with this abundance of life force and energy, and in Chinese medicine, it's called it's like your trust fund that you don't want to have to draw on. You want to just keep it or build on it. And then we have the usual funds that we can have commerce with. Well, as we age, the natural process of aging, and then just life and the stressors, without finding the strategies physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, which we're going to talk about, to renew, we start drawing on that trust fund. And the two aspects of this energy are the yang component, which is the dynamism, the energy that allows us to get up and move and keeps the cells functioning and our muscles moving. And it's the yin, which is the aspect of this fundamental life force that nourishes, provides lubrication, juiciness, you might say. So as we get more and more depleted, we not only get more fatigued and we have anxiety attacks and insomnia, we lose our muscle mass, we lose our memory, we can't balance our blood sugar, our immune system is compromised, but we also tend to dry up. We get more, we lose that natural yin, nourishing substance, that essence, and it shows up as dryness. We get dry skin, we get creaky joints, we get dry eyes, dry mouth, and dry vaginas. So vaginal dryness, which is a big problem that women don't talk a lot about, but it's very common, to me is a symptom of this drying up of these essences as we create more inflammation and overheat the body. So that's kind of my little take on all that stuff.
Well, that was excellent. What a great overview, Cheryl. I should have interviewed you for Fried.
Thanks. But you can see I'm passionate about this because I went through this, Joan, and I suffered for quite a period of time with that loss of verve. You know, you just don't have any enthusiasm, as you said. But I was having night sweats, anxiety attacks. I was experiencing, you know, a range of symptoms and issues, many of which I've had for quite a while, including pain and inflammation and arthritis and allergies, and all this stuff was going on. The night sweats and the anxiety attacks were the turning point that literally transformed my life because they were so disruptive to my life. I had to find out what was really going on. I had not a clue back then, and it began this journey that, you know, gets me so excited about the topics we're talking about, but I also was able to find the way to restore all of those functions. So I don't have any of those symptoms anymore, but I focused on it, and it continues to be a high priority in how I take care of myself on all those levels.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, that's the positive aspect of being fried. One of the Facebook friends said, you know, maybe burnout is a natural winter time of the soul, and it's a time when the symptoms are such that we have to go deep inside of ourselves, as we would in a winter, and inquire about what's really going on so that we can have a course correction. And that's exactly what happened to you.
Well, you know, that is so true, because I just want to add that because of what I went through, it, and as I'm reading your book, I'm, you know, kind of reflecting back on it, it was a metamorphosis for me. It totally changed my life and my profession.
Is that when you became a naturopath?
It's when I began to investigate hormones and understand.
Uh-huh.
I made the connection that it was a hormonal thing, and that led me to the adrenals and understanding estrogen dominance, progesterone. It led me to investigate that. It led me to writing my first book, Hormone Heresy. And, yes, then it led me to move from being a psychotherapist to becoming a naturopathic doctor.
Well, what an extraordinary journey.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that usually the way? For most of us, to make a tremendous change like you did, and you've just talked about, a couple of levels of that change, but it was a huge career path change for you. Something has to happen so that the old way of being, it's just not possible to go there anymore, kind of like a do-or-die moment.
And I think that is, wouldn't you say that's part of our life journey? Those are, will always, unless we are really sensitive and can kind of, you know, respond to the inner needs of our being so we can make the appropriate changes, it's usually something big that gets our attention.
It is. It's true. Absolutely. And, you know, that's why I think it's really important for people to start to get a handle on what burnout is and what the stages are, so that maybe they can make a course correction before utterly hitting bottom, because you can. You begin to watch your health decline, and I think the number of symptoms tends to mount as the stages of burnout progress. And the, you know, insomnia is a very big part of it. And you can only go so far trying to mask the symptoms. You know, the sleeping pills contribute to long-term sleeplessness in the end, and they mask the need for making changes in how you're living your life. And we don't have a lot of support in our society for living with pleasure, with joy, with balance, and finding our passion, because we live in a culture that is constantly addicted to doing, 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 doing. And I love to do, but there comes a point where doing becomes your undoing.
And, you know, that kind of leads me to the next question, because, I mean, you've shared a bit of your life story, certainly at the festivals in your book. But, I mean, you are, you're so ambitious. I mean, you know, to have you know, a couple of degrees, go to Harvard, you know. I mean, you were very achievement-oriented. You were operating in a man's world, right?
And, that's exactly right.
Right, and operating with those, you know, those values, which, which I found as part of my revelation that being a female and operating in a patriarchal world is very harmful to our physical and our psychic nature, our spiritual nature. And I'd just like to hear some of those learnings that you had that kind of brought you to this place of your own revelation about your
true self.
You know, that's
such a great insight, Cheryl, because whenever you're, you know, the old prototype of the round peg trying to fit in the square hole or vice versa, you're under a tremendous amount of tension, and it's hard to reconcile. You don't quite fit. And that's where burnout begins. And it happens, by the way, much more in achievement-oriented people, whether what you're desiring to achieve is really the very, very best for your children, or whether, you know, like me, highly achievement-oriented. I knew I wanted to be a scientist from the time I was a child. I knew I was interested in the spiritual, and I went through that phase, youthful spiritual exuberance, where you think if you just meditate enough, you will be enlightened here and now in this very lifetime. And at first, I think you view it as some end point and miss the point that it's a gradual becoming that takes place over the entire lifespan. But the square peg in the round hole bit, in terms of in my younger years at Harvard, I was both doing research and I was, I had a hospital-based practice. I was working with Dr. Herbert Benson, who was really well known at that point for being the first one to introduce meditation to medicine. And he did that by describing the relaxation response, that physiological relaxation of your systems that happens when you give your conscious mind a rest and you enter a different state where the body can just relax and it's not driven by your thinking anymore. And he found, well, this really is a tremendous way to alleviate stress. But at Harvard, there were very few women who had tenure track positions. At the time that I was there, there was only one woman in all of Harvard Medical School who had a tenured position. And as a woman, you always, number one, had to be proving yourself. And secondly, there's just, you know, while this is a generalization, it's statistically more true than it isn't true. And that is that women, the way that women operate in the world is what researchers from the Stone Center for Women's Research at Wellesley College call self in relation. And that is, we know our inner self through the galaxy of our relationships with others. And the male model, believe me, at Harvard Medical School when I was there, was not a relational model. I was told by one male mentor how to survive there. And he said to me, whatever you do, never show your vulnerability. Because if you do, the sharks will come in and they'll just bite your belly out. And I'll never forget that conversation, because it's entirely, I think, appropriate for the feminine aspect, whether it's in a woman or the feminine aspect of a man, to be able to say, you know, here's a place where I need some support. Here's a place where I'm unsure of myself or something's coming up that I need your help with. And to realize, I got to operate as a lone ranger in this environment, was extremely difficult for me. And it was not an environment at that time that really allowed me to be with my children as much as I wanted. These days, things, thank goodness, are different. And, you know, there's more of a possibility in many fields to have flexible hours to arrange things in a different way. But, of course, I was under that constant stress of how do I both do a good job at work and also be present for my children. And I would say that that really led to my first big round of burnout. And at that time, I was the associate director of the Division of Behavioral Medicine at Beth Israel Hospital, and then we moved to the New England Deaconess Hospital. And coinciding with that, I was also the person in charge of all of the research for our division and training to run behavioral medicine groups for, you know, different varieties of disorders, people with different problems. And personally, I was running a couple of stress-related disorders group, a cancer group, and an AIDS group every week. And so there were about 100 people in those groups, and I wanted to know every one of them personally, understand who they were as a human being and how the unique circumstances of their life was contributing to their symptoms. And then, of course, I had new patients to see, old patients who were coming back, research to administer, and training. And here's what ultimately happened to me. I really was incredibly burned out. I could just barely function and do all of that. I was in a perpetual state of overwhelm. I was getting sick pretty frequently. I was having migraine headaches pretty constantly. And then one night I was running an AIDS group, and we were talking about death and dying. And I said to them, you right now are the ones with the HIV virus. I'm apparently healthy, but there are no guarantees in this life. We have to live every minute like it's going to be our last minute because we don't know. And then I said, you know, after all, I could have a head-on collision on my way home tonight and be gone before any of the rest of you. Within an hour on my way home, I had a head-on collision. Mm. And my seatbelt held, but my shoulder harness didn't. And my head snapped into the steering wheel, and my nose was practically destroyed. It was lifted right off my face, just attached by the bridge. And landing up, I ended up in the same hospital where I practiced. I was in the hospital for 5 days, with surgery on my nose and IV antibiotics. And I did what no person should ever do. So I repeat this to your listening audience. Don't ever do this. Filled with painkillers and right after trauma, I had an absolute moment of clarity. And that was that I could no longer live that way or it would, in fact, kill me. It nearly had. Hmm. So I called up and I quit my job right there from the hospital bed. And, you know, I faced some of the same problems other people do. Well, you give up this job, how are you going to find another one in a field that you love? And eventually I did find the work that I wanted to do, and I went out on my own. But that was a real turning point for me. And I thought, never will I allow myself to get into that situation again. And yet, I did burn out a second time. And the second time, I realized I really needed better boundaries, that it wasn't that somebody else was telling me what to do or that I couldn't express my feminine instincts. It is that my personal sense is not only do I want to do my best, but I want to give to everybody who asks. And I found I was giving so much I couldn't get my own work done. And eventually I just burned myself out. And that's when I thought, you know, I have to get to the bottom of this. I have to, like, go back to better boundary school and learn how to say no. I have to look at the fit between me and my job, because I was at the point where I burned out the second time running a school that I loved, training people to be what are called spiritual directors or, you know, soul coaches. And while I loved doing that, I just don't have... I don't have the right personality type to run a school. There's too much conflict, too many difficulties. We had things that I found too hard to cope with. I just want to be able to walk in and teach. That's what I do well. And so I actually had to give up the school that I loved in order to save myself. And it became a great course in day-to-day spirituality for me, because if your energy is flagging, if you find that your body is saying no to things, it is time to make a course correction. And it's your body rather than your mind that really is the final arbiter of whether you're in touch with the moment, whether you're in right relationship with yourself and the world around you. And, you know, that's how burnout acts as its own spiritual guide. Mm-hmm. Burnout is a tremendous sense of separation from the life around you, from the people that you love, and from your own soul. And I do not want to go back to that space ever again.
So a couple of comments I want to make that I think your life is a great metaphor for the rest of us is that when you close the door on an abusive, dysfunctional, job or behavior that's showing up in a job or your work or something that is definitely having its toll on your body, when you have the courage or when you're just up against the wall and you have no choice, it's because, as we said earlier, new doors are about to open that are going to support you in a much greater way than you've ever allowed before. And you've certainly, I hear that in your story. And the other thing is that when we look at burnout or adrenal exhaustion, that's like the tip of the iceberg, isn't it? It's the body communicating, like it just can't go on the way you're going on. And what drives us to go on the way we go on are those wounded parts of us that we have
to
go in and do the work to address and to heal, to acknowledge first, even to acknowledge their existence, and then to go in and heal.
That's right. You know, one of the pieces of mind-body research that has intrigued me the most over the last 15 years is what's called the ACE studies, or Adverse Childhood Experiences. And I actually wrote a chapter on that in Fried, because it turns out through very well-controlled studies done at the Kaiser Permanente site in San Diego, what the authors of the study found is that the single best determinant of our physical and mental health in adulthood is what happened to us as children. And they looked in their Kaiser Permanente sample. They had very good history-taking methods. And they found like 7 categories of childhood problems in the home that really correlate with adult health. So, for example, if you were abused mentally, emotionally, sexually, if there was neglect, if you had a depressed parent or a mentally ill parent, if one of your parents was incarcerated, if either parent was gone for any reason, these, for example, each one would get a score of 1. And, for example, people with an ACE score of 4 or more are 5,000 times more likely to be depressed as adults. You know, I'm a researcher, I'm a medical researcher, and we used to get all excited, can we prove something makes a 0.01% difference, like 1 in 100 times or 5 in 100 times that something is not due to chance. A 5,000 times increase in depression is huge.
Yes.
And, for example, even things like we think about certain health habits like cigarette smoking or eating so much that we become obese. We think of these as problems, and it turns out that they're actually our best attempt at a solution to cover up the pain of things that happened when we were young. And there's a wonderful physician by the name of Dr. Vincent Felitti, who first noticed during these ACE studies, they were running a program for people who were obese to lose weight. And a lot of people dropped out, which is not surprising. But when he looked at who dropped out, it was actually people who were successful in losing weight. And he called them back and interviewed them, and he heard stories like, well, you know, I was sexually abused as a child, and I gained all this weight, and then I was no more attractive sexually. And it's always been my way of staying safe. And as soon as I started to lose the weight and become thin again, I was just too anxious. I had to have the weight back. And we don't really think about that, how what happened to us as children shapes our not only our health habits later in life, but our very health itself. So there is a one-to-one correlation between how high your ACE score is and what your health status is 50 or 60 years later. So, you know, the idea is that time does not heal. What time does is obscure the problem. So in burnout, for example, you know, looking at what is my own need, that the need to please other people is greater at times than my own need for survival. And when I look back at my own childhood, without going into details, I see exactly why that is. So oftentimes, if burnout is a habit pattern for you, you really will need to go back and see how your childhood bears upon this. Or, you know, take a look at what your personality is like. For example, I know better than I'm never going to be the CEO of a company. For my personality style, that's a high burnout job. So we really have to know and understand ourselves and to heal the things that require healing. And simply to be aware of things like personality, you're not going to change your personality or temperament. Those are what they are. But to choose a path in life that honors those rather than conflicting with them.
And that's really getting to the core of this whole issue. I mean, and you're the expert in mind-body approaches, so got the right person on the phone here. But that's what we're understanding about illnesses, that they are reflections of this disconnect between a place of harmony and peace inside of ourselves, and you know that ability to manifest it in the very cells of our body. And if it's not happening, then it's like the way to get our attention to do the inner work is, as long as you are aware that there is inner work that needs to be done.
Well, that's right. And, you know, it's always, of course, there are so many components to health. What we eat is a really big one. But, of course, that, too, has to do with emotional issues. Our genetics are part of that. But what we know now is that things like the way we're parented even affect the expressions of our genes. Mm. The way that we think can affect the expression of our genes. And we're beginning to understand, I think, the connection of not only the mind and the body, Cheryl, but the connection of our soul. Because really, burnout, when you're doing the work of your soul, and your work, you know, your work feels almost like play. You do much better and burn out a lot less than when there's a great deal of ego involved in what you're doing. And what I realized for me is I had a huge ego involvement, an attachment to the results of what I did that, you know, it's always nice to say that you can do something without attachment to results. Or, you know, I can write a book without being attached to how many copies it sells. But I have to realize that being human, we all have ego, we all have soul. But when you begin to get so invested in what you do that you forget what your values are, you know, so like so invested in writing a book or publicizing a book or whatever it may be that you start to use up your weekends. You start to not exercise or take care of yourself. You start to say to your husband, oh, have dinner with you? How about 6 weeks from Tuesday at 4:15 or whatever it is, that your ego has now taken over from what your soul most needs and what creates happiness, and that is the ability to connect with the people that you love, to connect with beauty, to let go of doing for a while, and to let your doing really come out of a state of reflection, to come out of a state of rest. And, you know, we have a lot of research that the quality of your work is actually better if you take rest breaks. If once you've run yourself ragged and you're in adrenal fatigue, you also go into a kind of brain fog, and then you're working more and getting less done, which is one of the symptoms of burnout.
I just want to make a comment. Then in the time we have, I'd like you to share some of those specific strategies that you can offer people to revive themselves. But I wanted to say that when I was in this cycle of burnout and having to rethink, because it was really hard to function, I started to explore menstrual wisdom at that point in my life. I never even heard of it before, but you know that ancient wisdom that women carry within themselves that are so connected to our menstrual cycles and the cycles within our cycles. And I learned that in your luteal phase, right before your menstrual cycle, those 14 days, is a time when we're more inner directed and drawn inward, and we need to rest, and we need to nourish this new energy, this new creative energy that we've given birth to, whether you've conceived or not. It's still an energy that's happening every month. And I remember I would feel tired in the afternoons because my body wanted to rest in this cycle. I was aware of that. But I had to go and get permission. I had to ask my husband, say, is it okay? Do you think it's okay if I took a nap in this afternoon? He looked at me like I was crazy. It's like, what are you asking me that question for? But that was part of the wounded feminine that I was realizing I carried around. I wasn't even allowing myself the permission to honor what my body was telling me, even though I became cognizant of that pattern and that need. I still had to get that outward, approval, because I was so disconnected from that natural instinct.
That's right, and that natural wisdom. And you think back, I'm sure that you and many of your listeners have read The Red Tent, mm-hmm. which was such a wonderful novel that explored what women used to do, and that is they'd go into menstrual huts. In many cultures, many indigenous cultures, the Red Tent is really about the Jewish culture, but you have the same thing in most Native American tribes. A woman on her moon or on her menses would go off because it was a time for reflection. And it was also a time when the dream life was so active, when the inner wisdom was active. And the fascinating part is that women who live in close community, like in dormitories, the research shows that they begin to cycle at the same time because we release pheromones that entrain one another hormonally. And that fascinates me. So this means essentially that most of the women in a given small tribe are going to be on their moon and go off to the women's moon hut at the same time. And for example, in the Iroquois Nation, and that's where the Constitution of the United States, it was modeled on that Iroquois wisdom, the women in the moon hut would receive wisdom. They'd get dreams. They'd be able to speak with each other. And I think every woman knows that when you're really talking to a girlfriend from your heart, suddenly you know more than you knew before. It's like the wisdom starts to pour out of you as you speak it and as you received. So you think about all of the women, menstrual age, in that tribe receiving wisdom, and then the males of the tribe being receptive to that wisdom and living in balance. But, here, what are you going to tell your boss? Well, sorry, I'm on my moon. I need to go sit in the moon.
That's right. I need to rest
and receive my wisdom. Like, you know, that's the way. That's the way to a pink slip.
But when we deny
the ability to rest or to dream, of course we're going to burn out.
Right. Right. So we have a few minutes left. Would you believe it, Joan? We've gone. This hour's gone by really quickly. Do you want to just share a few other of those revival tips that you have in your book? And let me just why don't we take a moment and just let people know that your new book is called Fried, Why You Burn Out and How to Revive. And where can they learn more? What's your website? Let's give some
Ideas. Two ways. My website is joanborysenko.com, J-O-A-N. B as in boy, O-R-Y-S-E-N-K-O, JoanBorysenko.com. And then my Facebook page, you know, just look up Joan Borysenko, the page that says author. And this is how I wrote the book. It's not some assistant, it's me. I usually show up a couple of times a day in conversation with people, and that really gives me juice. And that, you know, that's one of the tips for recovering from burnout. You really need to reflect on where the energy is for you, what drains your energy, what gives you energy. And the way I suggest, first of all, to go about this is that we don't ever, it seems, have much time to stop in this society. We're going full tilt. And without a timeout to reflect, it's hard for that deeper feminine wisdom to come forth. So I suggest, you know, you can even start, take a weekend and go somewhere. It doesn't have to be an expensive place. I used to go all the time to a Benedictine retreat center near my house. And I'm, you know, one of these people, I'm your basic Jewish Native American Buddhist mystical Christian. But, you know, when you go to a Benedictine retreat center, you can partake in whatever you want, but you can just sit in your room. Somebody feeds you, you know, go out for a walk, do whatever. But I found just getting out of my usual environment for any of us is the first thing we need to do. You've got to get a hold of yourself, have a chance to reflect. Kind of take a long nap that involves periods of wakefulness too, Cheryl. Mm-hmm. And that's often the start of revival for people, just getting some perspective. And then I do think everybody needs some kind of practice of centering that, and, you know, not everybody likes to meditate. In fact, most people don't. And you don't have to. Maybe meditation for you is being out in nature. Being out in nature and music are the two activities worldwide that are most listed as reducing people's stress and bringing them into the moment. But you need to schedule in some time every day for that kind of centering and renewal. For other people, it may be yoga or meditation or Tai Chi, or prayer, or, you know, inspirational reading, whatever it is, that you need to learn what it's like to let go and to come back to a state of center, because I think balance is often a case of subtraction. You want to take away some of the distractions so that your natural radiance can really shine out of you. So part of this, then, is learning how to center and learning how to pay attention to your own physical energy body. And a very simple way to do that is, you know, you start maybe 5-10 times a day, just whatever you're doing, just stop and notice, you know, where's your life force energy at on a scale of 1 to 10? Is it a 1? You know, are you really dragging? Is it a 5, you know? Is it a 10? Where is it? And to recognize that at a certain point, for me when I feel like my vitality has dropped down, you know, to about 6, and these are subjective scales, I need to do something to revive myself. And if I don't, I start to lose energy very quickly thereafter. So you have to be aware of your own kind of feedback system. Another thing that's very important is, I mean, this sounds like such a silly thing, but it isn't, is having some fun. You know, I was doing a workshop last weekend at the Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Stockbridge, Mass., and we were just having fun. And I asked people, you know, what's happened to fun in your life? And almost everybody said, we just don't remember how to have it. You know, we're so busy being responsible, we can't even remember what fun is.
Joan,
but boy, we got into it together.
I was going to say, on that great fun point, we've come to the end, and I know the conversation could go on, and I hope we do have another chance to continue it. It's been a delight, and I just want to thank you so much for your presence and for your wisdom.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for having me as your guest. It was a privilege.
We'll be in touch. Thank you so much, and all the best.
Thank you. You too.
And everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. My wonderful guest today was Dr. Joan Borisenko. I hope you'll remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.